The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to episode 6 of NOAA Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping you understand your legal rights and resources available. In 2013, there were 2.3 million adults incarcerated in federal and state prisons and county jails in the U.S. With a population of 323 million, that means that one of every 125 adults is incarcerated. With an additional 4.75 million adults on parole or probation in 2013, that makes 7 million adults, or 1 in 50 in the U.S., who is incarcerated or has a serious criminal background. So what's the point? The point is that with such a high prison rate, the highest per capita rate in the world, higher than China or Russia, that also means a very high charge rate in the U.S. for criminal offenses. That also means that there's a good chance that you or someone you know will face a criminal law charge at some point in their life. Sometimes that charge can be for a violation of probation, such as with the Philadelphia rapper Meek Mills, who's been made renowned by the Eagles and their Super Bowl run. Mills was originally charged with a gun infraction offense some 9 years ago, but since then has appeared before a state court judge on various infractions, such as riding a wheelie on his motorcycle, failing a drug test, and not complying with a court order restricting travel. Although the prosecuting attorney in Mills' case didn't recommend jail, the judge had had enough and sentenced Mills to 2 to 4 years in jail. The judge has come under fire by Mills' record label, his attorneys, and with the support and attention of the Super Bowl champion Eagles. His case has now made it here to Washington, to Lakewood and the Tacoma area, as he becomes the context of our show today. Regardless of whether the judge was right in sentencing Mills, who did the things that he was charged with, and I don't think that he contests that he didn't do those things, but he did violate the terms of his probation. So whether or not this is an example of a judge going too far to punish minor crimes, the point for us today is we've got to know and understand what our rights are. So today's show is going to focus on criminal law and the constitutional rights that you have as a citizen of this great country. I'm happy to be joined again by a civil rights attorney, criminal defense attorney, personal injury extraordinaire attorney, Blake Kramer from right here in Pierce County. Welcome back to the show, Blake.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Noah.
Blake, you've defended hundreds of individuals charged with crimes. I mean, the numbers might be even greater than the hundreds. And you've taken dozens and dozens of cases to trial. And again, I don't mean to minimize, because you might even have more cases than that. So you're the right person, I feel, that for us to have in studio today to ask these questions. What are our criminal rights?
We have so many rights, and it's such an important part of our citizenship to understand what they are. It's something that we want to not only make sure that we understand ourselves, but that we explain to our kids so that they know what their rights are.
Well, so let's break it down here. Where do our rights come from? What rights do we have as a citizen of this country, and where do those rights originally derive from?
You know, they're embodied in at least three separate sources, and the first is the first 10 amendments to our Constitution, which are collectively referred to as the Bill of Rights, and then they come from cases that interpret those rights, and then they also come from statutes, from laws that are passed in our locally, in state, in cities, to say what rights we have.
So let's take an example. What happens if I'm driving down the street and I get pulled over? There's a sirens behind me and the officer wants me to pull my car over and he pulls me over. What's the first thing that I should pull over to the right side of the road, and he comes over and he asks me for my driver's license and proof of registration, and I need to comply with that, right?
Sure. Well, we have you're in a different situation with regards to your constitutional rights when you're in a car and you're being pulled over. We have a law in our state called implied consent, and we have statutes that talk about how you're supposed to, what you're supposed to do when you're in a car. For instance, you have to have a driver's license, proof of insurance. You have to be able to produce those. Washington is a state where if you're just on the street and a police officer walks up to you, you have the right to remain silent. You don't have to even identify yourself. You don't have to say what your name is. There are certain exceptions to that. One is if you're carrying a concealed weapons permit. The other is if you are in a car. Another is if you are being cited for a crime, then you're supposed to identify yourself so that the police officers can give you that. But when you're in a car, already you've given up some of those rights merely by the fact that you're driving that car. If you're a passenger in the car, you haven't necessarily given up those rights. But if a police officer comes up to you and you're driving a car, you should identify yourself. An important caveat to that is that you're supposed to provide your name and your driver's license and proof of insurance. You don't have to say what your country of origin is. You don't have to say what your nationality is. That's something that that you're protected from having to say.
So if you're in the car and the officer comes over, so they pull back to my example, you get pulled over to the right side of the road, the officer comes up, I'd like to see your driver's license, proof of registration, you provide insurance, you provide that to him. Officer then says to you, I'd like to search your car.
What you can say to the police officer at that time, and you can say it any time when you're talking to a police officer, is you can invoke your constitutional right to be free from searches in your person and in your property. And you could say, I do not consent to a search. These words are words that lots of people refer to as magic words. There are certain words that you can say, and when you say them, they invoke rights, and they put the police officer in a position of having to make a decision. For instance, in this situation, if you say, I don't consent to a search, then the police officer has to make a decision about whether or not he's got a legal reason to get into your car, to search your car, despite the fact that you have invoked your right to be free from a search.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back after these commercial messages. So stay tuned. We're with Blake Kramer. We're talking about your constitutional, civil, and criminal rights on Know Your Rights. I'm Noah Davis, and I've been practicing law in Washington since 2001, handling hundreds and hundreds of matters. And I would love to help you with your case. If you have been injured in an auto accident or have a business litigation matter, email me at noah@noah.legal or call me at 253-215-4313. That's noah@noah.legal or 253-215-4313.
This is the story of a boy wizard whose name was Larry Smarter.
Larry, why weren't you in Professor Dinky Doodle's mythical creature classification class?
Larry wanted to go to college, so he visited knowhowtogo.org to find which glasses he really needed.
You missed the lesson on telling dragons from dragonflies.
Right. I want to go to college, so I'm taking Algebra 2, Biology, and a foreign language.
Foreign language? You mean so you can talk to unicorns?
Well, not exactly. Unless they're French.
But Larry had no time for unicorns, or even for Miss Petunia Tutti's time-traveling tutorial, which met every other yesterday at 25 o'clock.
Sorry I'm late. My snarkball game went into overtime.
And he knew knowhowtogo.org was way better than hoping for a snarkball scholarship. So, while his friends all aced invisibility, when Larry finally got to college, they were nowhere to be seen.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
I could talk for hours about the car stop. Do you want to do a personal stop?
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, the show about understanding your basic legal rights and resources that are available to you. I'm with Blake Kramer. Blake is a local attorney who practices civil and constitutional law and also personal injury. Blake's defended hundreds and hundreds of cases where his clients have been charged with criminal offenses. So, Blake, we were talking a moment ago about our basic rights that we have with respect to car stops, being pulled over, and an officer saying to us, "Show us your driver's license, insurance, proof of registration. I want to search your car." And you were telling us that one thing that we can do at that point is say, "No, I'm gonna assert my constitutional rights to be free of this search, and I'm gonna say no, absolutely not. You're not gonna search my car." Now, that officer at that point can go get a search warrant, or in violation of your rights, they can just search your car.
Well, actually, there's legal exceptions that he can use to get into your car. You know, one thing that might leap to people's minds when they think about this are exigent circumstances, emergencies. You know, if there's some sort of crisis that's going on that says to the police officer, he better get in there really quick because he sees something dangerous happening. Another is what's referred to as a Terry stop. The police officer might decide that he has reasonable, articulable suspicion that either a crime has been committed, is being committed, or is about to be committed. And while he's doing that, he can do a reasonable detention. It has to be reasonable in time and space. It can be for a limited period of time in a limited area. And if he can articulate that he's got suspicion that somebody in the car is armed, then he can do what's called a lunge search. He can search anywhere in the car for a dangerous weapon that the person might be able to lunge and get at. It gets really complicated to talk about all the different exceptions that they have. But the bottom line, the thing that I hope everybody remembers, is that they can start off by saying, "I do not consent to a search." Because if you say that, you're asserting your Fourth Amendment right. And whether or not the police officer does a search later on, the judge might hear that you asserted your rights. And one funny thing about our rights is that if you don't assert them, you lose them and you may never get them back. If you don't say, "I choose to remain silent," and then words that they have you saying afterwards, you can never keep out of the record, possibly, depending on different loopholes in the law.
I want to get to the right to remain silent and some of that Miranda language in a moment. But before we take that leap and maybe transition to the potential for arrest or more serious detention, you mentioned earlier about having a concealed permit, and is that something that we need to declare when we get pulled over by an officer? At what point do we need to say, "Officer, I'm carrying, I have a concealed weapon license"?
You know, there's no law that says that you have to declare it, but I would absolutely declare it now to do everything that you can to diffuse the situation. This is something you want to pass along to your kids as well, and the reason that you want to do that is that you want the police to know that you're carrying it, and they're not going to be surprised by it. Now, at the point that you do declare that you have that weapon, they're going to want to see it. They're probably going to want to take it temporarily in custody, and they're going to want your identification. And that's something that you have to provide since you're carrying a concealed weapons permit.
And at that point, you don't want to be making any fast moves either after you're declaring that you're holding a weapon, right? Especially
with all
the actions that we've seen with the police kind of being on edge and in the news and people taking fast actions. So I want to transition from the car now to being outside of a car. You're walking down the street and an officer stops you and says, "Hey, what's your name? Let me see some documentation."
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the first thing that I think about in this situation, I think most people would figure that somebody who does my work would think about ways to remain silent. But the first thing I'm going to be thinking about is whether or not I want to answer questions. And I'm going to tell you, there's some situations in which I'm going to want to answer questions. If I'm a witness and I've seen something terrible happen and I want the police to know about it, I'm probably going to answer questions. Or if I see police walking into a dangerous situation and I know that it's dangerous, I'm going to want to tell the police that they're walking into a dangerous situation. There's lots of reasons why you might decide that you want to answer police's questions. But at the same time, you need to understand your rights before you can decide whether or not you're going to be invoking them. And perhaps more importantly, you need to understand them and explain them to your kids so that they understand their rights. And here's the reason why. You need to know what your rights are if you're driving home from a friend's house after having had a martini, and all of a sudden you see those blue and red lights come up behind you. Then you're going to want to know what your rights are. Or if you're at home or at the office and you get a call from your kid and they say that they're at school and police are there and the police want to search that kid's locker, then you're going to want to know what your rights are and you're going to want to know what your kid's rights are. You need to understand your rights before you can start making decisions about whether or not and how to invoke them.
But if you've done nothing wrong and the officer comes up to you and says, hey, I'd like to see some identification, and you don't feel like talking to him, I mean, you certainly can just say, you can either say nothing or say, officer, and you'd probably want to be polite because you don't want to antagonize a situation that could go south fast. But you certainly could say, officer, I'm sorry, but I'm not willing to talk to you.
You can actually, in a first contact situation like this, here's another set of magic words you can use, and these are really important. You can say to the police officer when they ask you any question, you can say, am I free to leave? Am I free to leave? Those words are magical. All of a sudden, the police officer has to make a decision. Does he have that Terry stop protocol? Can he say that there's reasonable suspicion that a crime either did happen, is about to happen, or is going on right now? If he can't articulate that, then he's going to probably try to work around it, say, hey, I just want to ask you a few questions. And if you come back and say again, am I free to leave? And you continue to ask that, then the police officer eventually is going to say, you're free to go. Or they're going to say, no, you're not free to go. Because at that point, the police officer, if they've said you're not free to go, the police officer in their mind will probably have made one of two decisions. Either that he's got reasonable, articulable suspicion that a crime is being committed, or that he has probable cause to arrest you for a crime, one of these, which is a much higher level of evidence for him to be at. And if you're not at one of those two levels, then the police officer should tell you that you're free to go.
So that reasonable articulable suspicion, that comes from Terry versus Ohio, or you mentioned Terry stop. Is that where that those parameters come from?
Yeah, that's a 1968 case that really it came during the civil rights era, and it really started to define what protections police citizens have when confronted by police. And that's a United States Supreme Court case, and then it's been interpreted all over the country. And here in Washington State, it's been interpreted again and again. A real important case was just in 2014, State v. Russell, where they said that Terry v. Ohio needs to be clarified because people in Washington should be even more protected than what the Terry rights seemed, what a Terry right stop seems to say. So the interesting thing is that the Terry stop, which is a federal case, gives rights to everybody in the United States. But in Washington State, in cases like State v. Russell, we've interpreted Terry to say that we have even more protections than what you would get if you were in different states.
Oh, that's fantastic, because not all states are going to be like that. So Washington might be a little bit more progressive in protecting criminal rights or the rights of an ordinary person to be on the street and free from a search or a stop.
Absolutely. As an example, in some states, if a police officer asks you your name, your identification, you have to give it. In Washington State, that's not the law.
Oh, that's great. And that comes from the Russell case you talked about?
Oh, it comes from a whole bunch of cases, but the interpretation of State v. Russell was very important.
So I want to, again, shift gears on you, and we can go back to some of these subjects that we've talked about before, and we've talked Fifth Amendment a little bit, Sixth Amendment a little bit, we've talked Miranda rights a little bit, but I want to focus us in and hone us in on the Miranda rights. So Miranda was an interesting case, of course, and it's a seminal case. Miranda, a little bit of context there, he was a drifter and a laborer who, at age 22, eventually settled in Phoenix, Arizona. Miranda also infamously a defendant in a 1963 battery, kidnapping, and rape of a developmentally disabled 18-year-old female. Miranda confessed to that crime without being told of his right to remain silent or right to have a lawyer. I believe they put him in a lineup. He wasn't identified in the lineup, but the police told him that he was identified, and at that point he confessed, and then he went to the child, and they said, is that her? And he said, yeah, that's her. And she also identified his voice. And that was enough to for them, with the confession, to go ahead and charge him. At trial, Miranda was defended by a 73-year-old public defender. And a little bit later, we're going to talk about, if we have time in the show, the public defender laws and some of the intricacies in Washington and some of the cases that have come out recently against the state of Washington. And we'll talk more about that in a second. But Miranda was defended by a 73-year-old public defender. His name was Alvin Moore, who, to his credit, objected to the confession being used as evidence in Miranda's trial, because at that time the law was that you had the right against self-incrimination, you had the right to counsel, but you had to assert it. Yeah, you had to assert it. And Miranda was a Mexican-American. He wasn't educated. He didn't know his rights. These things weren't, I mean, we're talking the 1960s here. It's not like these, there wasn't the internet around. There wasn't people educating everyone on what their rights were. This show wasn't around, so he wasn't able to listen to us talk about these things. Miranda was eventually convicted, and the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, helped with the appeal. The case eventually went to the Supreme Court, and his conviction by confession was overturned on the Sixth and Fifth Amendment because Miranda wasn't told his basic legal rights. This gave way to the Miranda warning that we hear today, and I'm going to go ahead and read it, and then maybe we could break it down a little bit. So the Miranda warning goes like this. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. Do you understand the rights I've just read to you? So those are the Miranda rights. And, Miranda, the Supreme Court case of Miranda versus Arizona, there were a couple other cases at the same time that were grouped together and heard by the Supreme Court that related to this sort of thing. But it became known as Miranda rights. And these are the rights that came out of it. And they're famous rights, of course. And we're all read this, or you read it at the time of arrest. So let's break it down. At the time... let's say we go back to this Terry stop, where it turns into the officer has decided that I look like someone that's been described as having committed a crime. And now they go from having the suspicion to thinking probable cause. Maybe I have something in my pocket that's linked to the crime, or something stolen from the store. So they're going to go ahead and arrest me. Is that the time that they read these rights to me there on the street?
They are supposed to advise you of those once they have put you in custody. The law has been argued as being vague as to where you are or where you are not in custody. Sometimes we might be in a situation where you and I would think that this person is custody, but if the police officer hasn't made a decision in their mind that they have decided to arrest that person, then a court might decide that they're not in custody.
I see. So in that situation where you said those magic words, am I free to leave? Is that something that people need to really hang on to? Because at that point, if the officer says no, that would seem to say to me, you're in custody.
I would agree. But actually, you could either be in detention on a Terry stop, or you could be at a much higher level, which is in custody and being arrested. Now, one thing about these Miranda rights is that they're supposed to do them. It's not something that they're required to do. It's only something that needs to be done in order for them to get a statement that would be admissible.
I see. So you could be arrested, taken, booked, brought into jail. No one says anything to you. They don't ask you any information. And as long as they're not asking information, they don't have to use the Miranda rights or disclose that to you.
I've had cases where they forgot to ask Miranda, and they asked questions, and they got a lot of information, and then at some point later, they provided the Miranda. So it's not something that you can sue for. And I've had many clients come to me and said, hey, they didn't give me my Miranda. I deserve to have my Miranda. And well, yeah, you should be advised of your rights. But they don't actually have to, and you can't sue them if they fail to. It's just that the result is that if they don't give you your Miranda rights, then statements that you give before you get your Miranda rights are ones that a court will likely not allow to be used against you.
The fruit of the poisonous tree, right?
There you go.
Yeah. So Miranda then, looks like we're going to have to take a short break and stay with us. We're going to come back in about 2 minutes. We're talking about Miranda rights. We're talking about what to do if you're stopped, what to do if you're arrested, what you can say, what you shouldn't say. I'm with Blake Kramer on Noah, Your Rights. I'm Noah Davis, and I've been practicing law in Washington since 2001, handling hundreds and hundreds of matters. And I would love to help you with your case. If you have been injured in an auto accident or have a business litigation matter, email me at noah@noah.legal or call me at 253-215-4313. That's noah@noah.legal or 253-215-4313.
Hello, I'm James Carville. Many of you may know me from the world of politics. I'm also known to some as the Raging Cajun. But what many of you may not know is that I'm also a proud Marine veteran and the brother of an Army veteran who served in Vietnam. My military experience played a big part in shaping my future, This is why I honor and respect all men and women who have served and sacrificed for our country, especially those now living with catastrophic injuries. This is also why I'm proud to support the Paralyzed Veterans for America, who for more than 70 years has advocated on behalf of our nation's veterans, from the greatest generation to the latest generation who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, to make sure veterans with spinal cord injuries receive the quality health care, benefits, and rehabilitation programs they desperately need and rightfully deserve. Join me in helping our injured veterans. Thank you.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, changing lives, building futures. To learn more, visit pva.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have to.
Twinsies!
I kinda love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show that informs you of your basic legal rights and the resources available to you only on Clay 1180 AM. You know, before I forget, and I seem to forget on a lot of these shows, we do have a website, and that website is www.noahyourrights.com. And on that website, you're going to get some information about some of the topics we talk about, some of the rights that you have that we've talked about on the shows. Hopefully, I'm going to continue to add to that website to provide more resources that are available to you so that eventually this website can become a one-stop shop as to where you go for information, for legal information, so that you can get the best type of information at the best or at no cost or in a manner that allows you access to other information at a low cost. So it's noahyourrights.com. You'll also find past shows there. So if you want to listen to any of our past shows where we've talked about other topics like trials, talked about elder abuse, we've talked about protests and your civil rights, exercising your civil rights in a protest capacity. So you're going to be able to listen to other shows on noahyourrights.com. So make sure you check that out. You can also go to Clay 1180 AM and you're going to be able to check out other shows that we have here on the station as well. And that'll link you back to Noah Your Rights too. Today, we're talking criminal law. I'm with Blake Kramer and we're talking about Miranda rights. And Blake, maybe we've exhausted this topic a little bit, but before we leave it, I want to say a couple things about the Miranda case. First of all, a side note to Miranda, he was paroled, I think, Supreme Court reversed, he got retried, convicted again. He was paroled, and then I think he reoffended, was paroled again. Ultimately, he was killed in a knife fight in a bar in Phoenix, Arizona. So a sad footnote to that case. Some people say it got just due. I don't know. I'm not going to make an opinion about that, but just a side footnote. Also, another footnote, Thurgood Marshall. That name might come up and ring a bell for a few. That's a future Supreme Court justice, but Thurgood Marshall argued this case on behalf of the U.S. government, the Solicitor General's office, and he argued against Miranda and in favor of the government, saying that the public defender's office would not be able, and the governments would not be able to afford to provide indigent defendants with counsel in all these cases, which is what Miranda was trying to say. Miranda's lawyers is we need to provide, you have the right to counsel and people need to be told of their right. And Thurgood Marshall and the U.S. government were saying that resources were just not there, were not available from state and local governments to provide those resources. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Washington's obligation to provide indigent defense through the public defender's office, how they potentially have failed that, how the U.S. Attorney's Office is involved, Department of Justice, what the issues are there. But before we get there, there's one other topic, Blake, that I want to talk to you about, and that's our house, our castle. Mm-hmm. What rights, and we talked about the car, and you said we give up some of our rights being in the car, maybe the passenger doesn't, but we can tell the officer we're not willing to allow them to search, make them go get a search warrant, make them go get probable cause in front of a judge and sign on a search warrant. You talked about Terry stop, walking on the side of the street. Sometimes we want to give information, sometimes we don't. We can certainly utter the magic words when we want to, am I free to leave? If they want to make an arrest, they can. They should read us our Miranda rights. They may not, but we do have the right to remain silent. We have the right to have an attorney present. We have the right to counsel. And we understand that anything we say may be used against us after they read the Miranda rights. But what about our house? There's a knock at the door, and it's the police officers, and they say, open up. What rights do we have in our house?
Well, it's a pillar of our Constitution that we have the right to be free from government involvement in our homes, from government searches. And it really comes from back when we were having our constitutional convention in 1812. People had fresh in their minds how the British were building their soldiers in people's homes. And they said, you know, let's start our nation right. Let's say that people can be free from government intrusion in their homes. So the Fourth Amendment reflects that concern and says that there can't be unreasonable searches, but there's lots of exceptions to that. And we kind of talked about that with cars, too. If a police officer sees a fire inside a house, then that's an exigent circumstance. If it's burning the house up and he's worried about kids upstairs, he's not going to wait for permission, he or she. They're going to kick the door down because that's what police officers do. By and large, they're out there, they're protecting us, and they're trying to help us out. But the single biggest way that police again and again get into our homes is through consent, is through people saying, yeah, I'm going to let you in. And our courts have sometimes interpreted lack of refusing admission as permission. So if a police officer says, I want to look in your school bag, or I want to look in your locker, or can I go inside your house, and you don't say anything, a judge might say, well, they waived their right to be free from a search because they didn't respond, which the police officer at that time apparently reasonably interpreted as consent. Or lack of rejection, so the police officer felt that they had a reason to go in. If you want to be free from a search of your home, your property, your book bag, you need to say, I do not consent to a search. And you should say it again and again. You should say it so that your friends who are nearby, your family, hear you saying it, so that they can make notes of this. They can tell people that they heard you say this, and they can testify to it if it comes up in court.
So, you know, it made me think of a situation, too. When I was a college kid, the police came to my door, mm-hmm. and they were looking for the name. I forget the name. Let's say it's Seth. And they were looking for Seth Johnson. And mm-hmm. we had, like, a Seth Smith that lived at our house. And mm-hmm. so it seemed to be the wrong person, but maybe Seth Johnson lived there before. I mean, we're college kids. Who knows? And so they said that they wanted to search his room and his computer. And I said, all right, you know, sure. I mean, he doesn't live here. I don't know who, but there's this other Seth guy that lives here. And I gave access to the house. Now, you know, thinking back, I wish I wouldn't have. I wish I would have said, where's your search warrant? Because they didn't have one. It's just that when you put yourself in that situation, especially if you're a kid or you don't understand your rights, you're scared. I mean, you're really afraid at that point. And you're also afraid, even if you have nothing to hide, you're afraid that by asserting your rights that it's going to show that you have something to hide. You know?
That's right. That's right. People get really nervous. And one thing when we were talking about Miranda that I probably should have mentioned is that one of the many reasons you want to enforce your rights is that police are allowed to engage in subterfuge to gather evidence. A police officer, and there's been several Supreme Court cases that talk about this, a police officer can say, hey, I heard this. Do you want me to believe this is true? Do you want this to go easy or do you want this to go hard? Do you want to cooperate with me? This is what I heard. Don't you want me to see if this is a false statement about you? You want to, police officers are allowed to do many things to, in the furtherance of their job, to gather evidence and to protect other people. And if you're not protecting your rights, then you're in a discussion with a police officer where you're not really understanding what's going on, and you need to remember that you can say, I do not consent to a search. We talked about how there's certain exceptions how a police officer can get in your house. One is exigent circumstances. The biggest one is consent from the people in the house. But another exception, like that you just pointed out, is if they have a warrant. But here's something important that people should remember, particularly in this day and age. Right now, when Homeland Security comes to people's homes, they frequently come with administrative warrants. If you look at a warrant that's been issued by the court. It's going to have a caption at the top that's going to talk about the case that that is being pursued by the police. And at the bottom right-hand corner, you should see the signature of a judge or a magistrate. That should be there at the bottom of the warrant. These things might be moved around somewhere on the paper, but in every one I've seen, the judge's signature is on the bottom right-hand corner. However, when Homeland Security comes to people's homes, very often they are bringing what are called administrative warrants, and these have been signed by administrative officers. These don't give them the same rights. You can say to Homeland Security, if they come to your house with one of these warrants that are signed by an administrative officer, you can say, I do not consent to a search. You can say, show me the warrant, take a look at the warrant, look for the signature in the bottom right corner, and if it says officer, administrative officer, or something like that, anything but a judge or a magistrate, you can say, I do not consent to a search, and you can slide it back. As a matter of fact, if you're just being abundantly protective of your rights, you can get a valid warrant and say, I do not consent to this search, and slide it back to them. Now, they're going to come into your house and search anyway if they have a valid warrant. But if all they have is an administrative warrant, they're going to leave.
Well, how do you know the difference between the administrative warrant and a court-issued warrant? Especially, you know, the person listening out there, someone knocks at your door at 2 in the morning, and you wake up and they present to you this warrant. I mean, how are you going to be able to identify whether or not it's like a enforceable warrant or not?
It is really tough to have a clear mind when, A, it's late at night or early in the morning, B, your heart is pumping because there are police officers at the door, and C, any one of us, when we're confronted by a police officer, if we don't have a lot of experience in being arrested again and again, any one of us is going to feel this great urge to say, hey, we're actually a good person, and we're a nice person, and we're not guilty of any crime, which leads a lot of people to waiving their rights. But when all these different emotions are coming down at you all at once and your heart is racing, in this situation, the way that you protect yourself is you read the warrant very carefully. You make sure that the address that they're searching is the correct one, because that happens, and that's happened in here in our community where they come to serve a warrant and they actually have the wrong house.
Yep, I have heard of that. Absolute cases like that.
And look at the bottom for the judge's signature, versus an officer.
Blake, we're going to have to take a quick break again. So listeners, stay with us. We're talking criminal law with Blake Kramer. We're going to be back in 2 minutes, so hold the line and join us back in 2 minutes. I'm Noah Davis, and I've been practicing law in Washington since 2001, handling hundreds and hundreds of matters. And I would love to help you with your case. If you have been injured in an auto accident or have a business litigation matter, email me at noah@noah.legal or call me at 253-215-4313. That's noah@noah.legal or 253-215-4313. 4313.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here? Of course. Who's asking? I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like. Consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, the show about understanding your basic legal rights and the resources that are available to you. I'm with Blake Kramer, who is a Pierce County, a local attorney that is a constitutional rights, civil rights attorney, also a criminal defense lawyer and a personal injury lawyer. And we've been talking about the different rights that you have in your car, on your person, in your house. And we left it off on we left the topic off on being searched at your home. And before we rejoin that conversation and that topic, you know, you talked about the police engaging in some subterfuge occasionally and lying to you basically in order to get you to admit information. It reminded me of the case where they sent the lottery ticket to the criminal defense or the potential defendant, a suspect. They sent him a notice that he had won, not a lottery ticket, but a notice that he had won some kind of drawing or some kind of award. What they wanted was him to lick either the stamp or the envelope and send it back, because that's what it said. Hey, send this back and claim your award. And so he licked it, and then they tested the saliva for DNA, and they ended up, it was upheld. You know, that was alleged to be an illegal search of his person, and the court ruled that it wasn't. And he was allowed to, they were allowed to use that, if I remember that case right. But that was an example, I guess, of the police engaging in some kind of suspicious conduct of their own in order to get some information from you. So you got to be wary about the police. You got to be wary about talking to them, even if you got nothing to hide. You know, there's still some situations where you're going to want to not talk for one reason or another. You're going to want to talk to a lawyer. So let's go back to the house situation. Police come over. They don't have a warrant to enter your home, but they say that they want to come in. They're looking for John somebody. Maybe this person has stayed at your house in the past. Maybe they're there at that time. Maybe they're not. But you don't want to let the police in for whatever reason. Maybe there's something that you have that you're worried about. Maybe there's a firearm that's not registered that was given to you by someone else that you're worried about. I mean, whatever the situation is, maybe you didn't pay for some products that you have shipped over from somewhere else or didn't pay tax on them. But there's some reason that you don't want to let the police in. You don't even have to have a reason. It's your house. You just don't want people that you haven't invited over into your house. Let's talk about those exigent circumstances where the police can say over and despite you saying, no, I do not give you consent to search my house, that will allow the police still to come in. You talked about a warrant. They don't have one. You talked about, there being a danger, a potential danger, mm-hmm. either to the community or maybe to the police. So what would a danger be? Would it be that they saw someone fleeing into the house, like there was a crime being committed and someone ran into the house?
Absolutely. If they saw an armed person that they thought was just involved in a crime running in, they would do that. You know, there was an interesting case, I think last week, that was in the Tacoma News Tribune, about police showing up and the people inside were apparently quickly flushing methamphetamine down their toilet. And if the police had enough information to say that they heard this flushing and they looked through a window and they saw somebody dumping chemicals into the toilet, then their exigent circumstance could be that they could allege to a judge that the exigent circumstances was that evidence was being destroyed and that waiting for a warrant would be too late to protect the gathering of this evidence. But a judge would look very carefully at that to see how they knew that the mere flushing of a toilet, or how they knew that the chemicals that were being dumped were illegal. And it would come down to a very specific question of the facts that the police knew.
Well, and that gets into, and we're probably not going to have a lot of time to talk about this subject, but that gets into that pretext. And it reminds me back to those law school days, because criminal law is not an area that I regularly practice in. But I remember in law school, you know, class that we had to take, and we talk about those pretextual stops. And the officer says, they didn't put their blinker on. And I pulled them over and I found 800 pounds of heroin in their trunk. You know, those mm-hmm. sorts of things where they didn't have a legitimate reason for a stop necessarily. And they do. And then they end up finding something else. So that would seem to happen in the house, too, where they say, I saw him flushing on the second floor, you know, out of my view, around the stairs, because they say they heard the toilet flushing. They must be flushing drugs. Turns out they were, but how could they see something like that, right?
You know, I got to tell you, police officers so many of them are committed professionals, and they take their job so seriously, and some of them are unerringly good at making observations and seeing things. I remember one case I had early on in my career. A police officer was driving north on I-5, and he pulled my client over for DUI, and I couldn't figure out what his probable cause was, how he knew it. And then I watched the camera from his car, and he was sneaking along I-5 late at night, coming up behind one car after another, and all of a sudden, you could see my client's car way off in the far left, and it kind of jerked within its lane just a little bit, and that police officer just swooped in on it like an eagle going after a rat. He just had, you could tell that his instincts were pinged in a way that mine might not necessarily have been, but his powers of observation were so high and his experience level was so high. And when I questioned him on the stand, he said, well, the way I saw this person moving around in their lane, I just had the sense that they were probably intoxicated. I didn't know for sure, and I thought maybe they're tired or something, but I saw enough for me to just want to pull them over. So that's just a small example. Again and again, I've seen examples of police officers with incredible powers of observation that they use to gather evidence and make observations of which they make important and sometimes dangerous decisions on a daily basis.
Yeah, and you know, and I should say too, picking up on a topic you said a moment ago, and that's most cops out there are good people, and they're trying to do the best to protect the public, and they're making right decisions. There are sometimes some bad decisions that are made. Sometimes there are officers that maybe they have ill motives, and those motives lead to bad decisions, more bad decisions being made. But for the most part, they're people just like us, and they're trying to do the right thing, and they're trying to make right decisions. And when we're confronted by them, we need to try to make the right decision too, and that's to remain calm. I know it's not a Miranda right, but you have the right to remain calm, and you should execute that right. Please remain calm, because the police are often edgy too, because you never know. I had a roommate in college. He was a trooper, a California State Trooper, and he pulled over what turned out to be a Vietnamese gang member, and in Los Angeles, he just pulled him over on a traffic stop, and took his license, went back to the car. Turns out that I think the young kid, had some warrants out for his arrest. He was probably in his early 20s, and he went back up to the car, and when he got there, this gang member just shot him point blank, shot him and killed him. And so he died in line in front of people that were eating outside at restaurants, on sidewalk restaurants, and I mean, just in plain view. And then he took off, you know, after that. They ultimately caught him, convicted him, and he's serving time in that major federal penitentiary. But the point is that cops, police officers are going to be suspicious of us too, because they don't know what they're – did they just pull over Jeffrey Dahmer? Did they just stop that? Because remember, they let him go. Jeffrey Dahmer actually was there was a gentleman that ran from Dahmer's house, and then Dahmer came out and said, "Hey, this is my boyfriend. He's intoxicated," and the police let him both go. You know, they don't know. They've got all this training, but they don't often know what that situation is going to unfold as.
They do. They have to be careful. But I'll tell you another thing that police officers and prosecutors do when they are confronted by police. They practice and use their constitutional rights. And that's happened to some publicity here in Pierce County over the years. Sometimes police show up at a prosecutor's office, home, to investigate whether or not a kid was involved in drunk driving. And the prosecutor uses his constitutional rights, the same rights that we're talking about. And police officers do the same thing. I've been giving lectures about constitutional rights for a long time now. And fairly recently, I was giving one where there was a recently retired Washington State Patrol sergeant, and he was listening to my lecture with a fairly grim look on his face, and I thought he was being pretty critical of me, was what I was imagining. After I finished, he and his wife came up to me and said, "You know, everything that you said is correct. These are rights that we all need to know, and if somebody in my family had understood these rights, they would not be in prison now." So since these people know how important our rights are, the rest of us should understand these rights as well.
You know, there's a topic that I wanted to get into that I don't think we're going to have time to get into, and that's the Sixth Amendment right to counsel. Under the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, you have the right against self-incrimination, and that's a very important right. It means you have the right to remain silent. You don't have to say anything to the police or anyone else that comes to you and asks, "Did you do this crime?" You can just not say anything. Right against self-incrimination, which means you don't have to testify in those defense cases either. Well, The Sixth Amendment does a bunch of things. It gives you the right to speedy trial. It also allows you to confront witnesses and make sure that they're there so you can confront them. And there's a lot of cases about that, and in rape cases or juvenile cases. And then there's the right to counsel. And the states in state court cases have to abide by these constitutional amendments, the Fifth Amendment and Sixth Amendment, through another amendment, the 14th Amendment, which provides due process, and it incorporates that into states' rights or the people's rights in under the state law. So the states still have to grant us these constitutional protections, even though we're not in the federal realm. So the Sixth Amendment right to counsel means that the state has to provide indigent defense. There are a bunch of cases that have come out of Washington recently where the state's been sued. We're not going to get into those. We're not going to have time. But Blake, in 30 seconds or less, do you think you could give us a summary of what we've talked about with criminal rights?
Talk to your kids. Make sure that they know that when they are talking to a police officer, they can start off by saying, "Am I free to leave?" The next thing they can say is, "I choose to remain silent." The next thing they can say is, "I do not consent to a search." Finally, they can say, "I insist on speaking to an attorney." These are four sets of magic words. They invoke important constitutional rights.
Well, Blake, I'm going to have you back on the show. We still got to talk about the right to counsel. Trump also, he got my ire today, but he's going to escape. He's going to escape my speech of loathe today, because we're going to run out of time. However, I'm going to have to bring you back, Blake. I hope you'll join us again. I hope all of you listening out there can visit my website, knowyourrights.com, and can email me at noah@knowyourrights.com. Tell me what you're interested in hearing. I want to know what topics interest you. So keep listening. Join us next week at 4 o'clock on Clay, 1180 AM, your conversation station for Know Your Rights, and your host, me, Noah Davis. Thank you for listening.